Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where we bring you tips and insights to help you raise more money for your organization and lead more effectively. I'm your host, Andrew Olson.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Olson here, and I am thrilled to be here with a fairly new friend, a gentleman by the name of Brian Hurd. So Brian is the Group VP of Major Gift Services at Dickerson Baker. He's a long-tenured fundraiser, so Brian's career includes serving at Dallas Theological Seminary. He was a consultant to the Salvation Army, spent time leading development at Alliance Defending Freedom, and most recently at the Colson Center. And he's also been a consultant along the way while doing all that other work. I'm thrilled to have him on the Dickerson Baker team, and I'm really excited to talk major gifts with him today. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Excited. This is one of my favorite, if not my most favorite subject within our arena. Glad to be here.
I bet, man. Hey, so take a minute and just tell us a little bit more about you, kind of your origin story in the business, and why you love major gifts.
Yeah, so this is 29 years for me. I got started early in my career in insurance. That was kind of the family legacy, if you will, and had a chance in my mid-20s to go volunteer my wife and I at an organization, the youth organization, but we were kind of running programs, learning how to fundraise, and it just kind of got an intro into the fact that we had no clue what we were doing, but trying to do a lot. And that led through some connections to get to go join Dallas Seminary. Dr. Swindoll was headed there, a gentleman that had a lot of experience. And so I got to join a team from 97 to 2000, do a $7 million campaign, work with the campaign consultants, which was Cargill and Associates, really learn how campaigns work. I had a major gift portfolio and then worked on some high-end events. And it was just a phenomenal fit for me. And I think what I learned through that is there's a real business side and intentionality to what we do. So I've always kind of felt like I'm a businessman that helps organizations work on their organization so they'll be successful in it. And that really just connected to me. And long story short, I started having others. I think I'm a natural coach, consultant, and others started asking my opinion, even though I'd only had a few years. And I really had the opportunity to go launch out in 2000 and start to consult and coach. And really, you know, a lot of different areas. I might have called myself an organizational strategist or an organizational consultant, but man, major gifts, that's part of the revenue is really what I had probably is my sweet spot, working with high-end investors, working with major gift officers, helping build strategy and roadmaps around that. That just seems to be my sweet spot. I love it. I know it really is what transforms organizations as well.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again for joining for the show today. I got a number of questions just kind of broadly about the industry and about major gifts that I want to run through with you. I think the first one though is, you know, we've been talking a lot over the last couple of years about how philanthropy is changing.
Yes.
And how you know, sort of the kind of general lower dollar givers seem to be walking away from giving, right? If you look at the trends, whether it's Giving USA or anybody else's data, what we're seeing is a lot of low dollar gifts and givers going away. And
Correct.
Really just the top, you know, small percentage of givers kind of carrying the load for ministries and other charities. In fact, I was looking at some data today from Dr. Russell James at Texas Tech, and I was stunned to see that when you look at all the wealth in the U.S., only 3% is held in cash right now. 97% is assets.
Amazing. Right?
And that tells you something, I think, about the level of people who have access to capital, right?
Right.
When you think about that, like, is that consolidation a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What's top of mind for you when you think about that?
Yeah, I like the way you phrase the question. I don't know if I've thought about it as much as good or bad, but just reality that I look at almost 30 years now, the landscape of the number of nonprofits, and I saw that about 6 months ago, has way more than doubled. The more strategic nature of major donors, right? So even alone of all these stats, but just the number, the amount of noise, the number of nonprofits, and not growing the major donor or the donor pile at the same, the donor pipeline at the same value just means you have to be more strategic, in my opinion. The last 4 years has been really intriguing, I think, especially because COVID was interesting, right? Where there was some pent up money. It was a little different than 08, 09, where major donors really shrank back. That was really tough with a lot of clients because that affected, I think, more that segment. And so there was a lot of shrinking back. That wasn't so much the case through COVID and the pandemic, but you know, it was hard to get an anomaly of what was true. And now we've had like these 4 years, and the trends you're saying are exactly what we're seeing is we got a smaller few of people that are giving and supporting at higher rates and even more organizations. And that's probably not a good trend.
Yeah.
But what I would share with clients is regardless of that, we've got to focus on major gifts. You know, even I feel like the industry changed in 08, 09 to where major donors really started thinking, why am I giving to certain organizations? How do I become more strategic? Like you just almost had to be in a place to where you had more vision and thinking things out better. And then the last thing I'd say is the non-cash. That really just speaks to the ability of you have to be intentional. Like if we're going to really be successful in that arena, right? You can't be episodic or ask people for gifts and expect those to come right away because it's not as liquid. So we have seen a trend to where we have to be thinking, you know, well part out so that we can help these major donors think about how to structure their own portfolios and timeliness of the gifts, because we might be working on something, but it could be 6 months from now before they're going to be ready to turn that asset and really turn it over, regardless of what that can look like.
You know, that's a great point. So this might be a little bit of a rabbit trail, but you know, when I think about wealth in the U.S. today, I mean, you know, it's not like it was decades ago, nor is it like it was like it is in other countries right now. There's a lot of wealth that's newly created, right? A lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of brand new business builders, and I as I think about those people, like I wonder if the way that they give and the way that their revenue flows, does that align with the typical like nonprofit, hey, we're gonna do a big ask at year end? You know, what do you see and what kind of change in thinking might a organization need to process to really better align with how someone like that comes into capital that can be invested in charity? And like, I don't know, unpack that for me.
Yeah, I think I'm tracking with you. I think we can, if we have no other assumption, I think we can work from the fact that we're still seeing a good majority of the giving and major giving still coming in the last quarter. But I think we've had seen many things that have changed that. Donor advised funds, for one, family investment offices or foundations, not your non-traditional foundations, right? But where people have made a lot of money, have put it in a vehicle, and have very specific things around it. Those two alone, that money has already been released into a structure. It is not dependent on time of year. So again, we've seen this grow. So the more we can do analysis on our donor base, start to really understand our top tier of givers, when their giving patterns make sense, or the fact that they're not locked into a Q4 type of rhythm, like when I started this, because there was so much cash in the giving, and so people were at the end of the year were saying, oh man, we've had a great year, we're going to give us influx of cash. They've already predetermined it through a lot of these vehicles. So I go back, it just makes me think, I don't think the fundamental question that I've always seen with major givers is they ask three big questions. Why should I give? And that speaks to their motivation, their heart. It's all over the map, right? Where should I give? So those are typically the causes and the organizations they care about. I think the third question has changed a lot. How should I give? So I think when I first started this, cash, Q4 Q4, like that was a lot easier to understand.
Right.
Now all the vehicles that are in place and sophistication have changed how they want to give. The complexity of assets, the sales of businesses, the donor advised funds, the family offices, all these kind of things. So that's why our job is to ask really great questions that help clarify what's the uniqueness of a major donor, because that can look different for all three how they answer those questions.
Okay, friends, let's take a quick break from today's conversation and talk about your leadership. Do you ever feel stuck or like you just don't know whether you're leading well or not? I know that's something that I've felt at times during my 25-year career leading people and teams. And many of the leaders that I've coached and advised over the years have also felt that way. That's exactly why I created the 90-Day Leader's Journey email course. This course is jam-packed with value to help you become a more effective and competent leader and to give you the confidence to step into any leadership opportunity. The course is broken into three key aspects of leadership, which are your leadership character, your leadership culture, and your leadership competence. Over the course of 90 days, you'll receive one email every day. Each email is brief, to the point, and focused on a single specific topic to help you level up your leadership game. This is the same exact leadership training that I deliver personally to the leaders that I coach and mentor every day in business and nonprofits all across North America. Only instead of paying thousands of dollars or even tens of thousands of dollars, you can get access to this content at a significantly reduced cost. You can access this game-changing leadership email course over at yourleaderjourney.com.
You said two things in the last few minutes. You talked about relationship and you talked about asking great questions. I was talking to another friend of mine, Jason Zwang, who's a major gift officer and a consultant as well. And we were talking about these kind of similar things. And one of the topics that bubbled up is really this idea that like the way that fundraisers learn the craft, right? And what's working well there and what's not. And you know, I was kind of, you know, joking that there's only, if you look at 100 charities, you might find one fundraiser who became a fundraiser on purpose.
Right? Yeah, that's good. I agree.
And so
I fell into this as well. I wasn't looking.
Right. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
So, you know, really the question we were struggling with is if it's not an intentional thing for people to go into this as a vocation, then what's the pipeline for talent development and training?
Oof,
because it's not like there's a school that people go through, right?
That's right.
It's more of like an on-the-job apprenticeship. And I'm concerned that, A, there's not sort of an intentionality in a lot of shops around that. And B, we're about to have a high percentage of turnover in the sector because of retirements. What do you think's needed and what's appropriate as far as like how we develop talent moving forward for major gifts?
Yeah, I think my interest and heart is the same as yours. Whether or not I have all the answers, I think about this because it's critical. And even for myself, I'm getting towards the end where I'm more on the tail end than the front end, right? I see some of these young, I want to see the legacy. I mean, one of my core values is legacy. The other is generosity and authenticity. So really you think about two of those questions really are part of the DNA of what has even drew me to this industry is generosity and legacy. So when you ask it around people, here's one thing I don't think has changed. Donors give to VIP, vision, impact, and people. Hmm. Now, there's a lot of other technical things, but I try to keep things really simple for clients and then we can nuance it. But at the end of the day, vision, impact, and people. So what has not changed about that is people matter. They're critical within an organization. The longevity, give me somebody that is fully in on a mission without all the skills, but is willing to really grow and be coachable. And we can watch them have tremendous success with good consulting practice, good coaching, than somebody that is just here and gone overnight. So I think one is we got to really think through how do we raise up people that really have a connection of knowing who they are, but really want to make a difference, because I think that's what draws a lot of us as major donors, major donor reps and consultants and leaders. So I think that's part of it. The heroes, in my opinion, are the major donor officers. I love the fact that they're called. So I just, I mean, when I'm helping a client just think through, I think through cause fit, culture fit, skill set, either related or, experience, and then their experience. So those four things, cause fit, culture fit, skill set, and experience. So they're coming from all different places, but I think if they have a little bit of the heart of, I really see the impact and what I can do through this industry, and it ties a little bit to their own purpose and calling, I think we need to call that out in people, because you're right. We're seeing some great folks retire. I one of the best fundraisers I've known and worked with, and it's a joy of what we get to do in consulting, just retired. He's 78. Now, he could have retired years ago, but he was so called to the mission, raised hundreds of millions of dollars. It's crazy. But you can't replace that. Even his void on the team as a mentor, as a watch what I do more than what I say, because
right.
He wasn't the kind of person that was going to teach a class on this. You and I might. We're missing that DNA. So we've got to raise up the new ones and get people engaged even at their 20s to really understand both the art and the science of this. I don't know if that's a great answer, but I think about it like you.
No, I mean, it's one of those things I think we're going to, as a sector, we're going to have to wrestle with. You know, I was, as you were talking about this, I was hearkening back to my wife's uncle was an engineer at General Mills for, I don't know, probably 40 or 50 years, something like that. Long career, right? And when he retired, almost immediately, one of the executives called him and said, I know you're done, but you're not done yet. Can we bring you back as sort of a mentor in residence kind of thing, right?
Right.
And so companies like that actually have formal programs where they say, when people retire, we lose so much talent and knowledge and experience that even if we replace them with five people for every person that left, we would still be swimming upstream because of the knowledge gap, right? So they're actually intentionally retaining people like that as mentors and advisors to the new crop of talent in their business. And I just wonder, like, is that something that we as a sector should also be thinking about? Like, how do we retain that knowledge base in a way that's effective and meaningful for developing the next generation of talent, right? And maybe that particular thing is not the answer, but I think we've got to struggle with it. It also makes me think of something that you shared with me recently. So we were talking about this idea that, there's a lot of chief development officers that are leaving, right? And it's harder and harder to hire that role. And so you've been doing some work around this idea of like fractional chief development staff. Talk about that. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I really just kind of fell into this years ago and then just realized there's a real opportunity with this. And so for many years, and I'm thrilled to be a part of Dickerson Baker because of all the talent opportunities and being holistic. But when I was a single shingle or really consulting a good portion of the time on my own, a lot of my client work was kind of stepping into a role of kind of a fractional role. I wasn't going to be there forever, and that was clear. My gifts were very strategic and bringing some experience and some know-how and structure and the things that we like to do. But really stepping in, because you can go, and you know this so well, Andrew, that you can go for 6, 9, 12, even 18 months between leaders of an organization. So the team's got to just continue to grind out. I've had a client that I did 4 different contracts with, and in that time, they had 4 separate CDOs come and go. One of them lasted 6 weeks. Like 9 months. The longest that was there was 18 months. So I kept coming back to fill a gap because that team stayed. So we see this in the business world where fractional outsourced talent makes a lot of sense. You might pay a premium for it, but you're getting a very specific skill set, knowledge, return on investment. Like, this person's coming in to do what they do very well. I just think we're late sometimes in a nonprofit world to adopt this, Yeah. And I think there's wide open opportunities. We got more nonprofits. We got a lot of people that really know their stuff. And you think about coming in, if you really need the strategy and the structure and kind of the game plan, that's a great place for a fractional person to come in. Because once you've built that over 12, 18, 24 months, you don't necessarily need the same skill set to then come to manage it and lead it, right? You speak a lot about leadership and management and processes. Think about if we can hire some experts to get things structured, then it opens up the door for who could actually lead a team. They don't have to bring all these years of know-how. They can now come up and work the structure, work the plan, but they're really great at coaching, at working relationships. So I think there's an opportunity, at least in the development arena, that's my area, yours, for CDOs or major gift folks leading teams, if you have, you know, three or more reps, to outsource that instead of just trying to always look for how you hire that person.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I think you're right. I mean, we do see it so much in the commercial sector. I mean, even at our firm, we've got a fractional chief financial officer, right?
Right.
It's a model that's proven time and again in lots of different environments. So I don't see why it couldn't be viable in this environment as well. I want to shift a little bit as we've been talking about talent. I would just love to get your perspective. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there who are either trying to hire their first relationship fundraiser or trying to replace someone, right? And they might be in that space where they're like, you know, we had Sally and she was amazing and she did great work, and we've had this gap now. We don't really know what made Sally great, but we just know she was good, right?
Exactly, exactly.
In your experience, like, what are some of those linchpin kind of character traits or experiences that someone needs to have to be a really good major gift fundraiser?
Yeah, it's always the key question. And I wish we could just put a formula together and we would nail it. But I do think there's some things over time that I've learned. I think number one, I said it earlier, I think you have to have a heart of generosity. It's hard to call out of others what you haven't experienced and done yourself.
That's great.
And so if you don't kind of believe in the greater principle of giving is better than receiving and what we can do, that's a hard place, because most of the best work that people are doing is transformational, not transactional.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to hire a salesperson. Matter of fact, if they're coming out of the sales world, they're normally going to be in long sales, not short transact, because that just doesn't apply to what we're doing.
Yep.
So I think generosity is one. I think knowing yourself well, meaning just being comfortable in your own skin, knowing who you are, what you're called to, what you're passionate about, because we all work out of that central place, right? So if you need a lot from this business, you're probably not the right person for it.
Huh.
Because at the end of the day, the best fundraisers by far are, you know, to use a golf analogy, are caddies, if you will. They're strategic. They're connecting major donors with a vision of the organization. They're doing tons of the work, but they're at the end of the day, not in it for the credit. And if you are, you're going to step on a lot of toes, because at the end of the day, I might have great program people, CEOs, others, like my major donors want to connect with those people. It's a lot of why they may be giving. I'm the relationship manager for that. I'm working the 12-month account plan. I'm the one that's making sure all that happens. But if I try to get in the way, that's key. That just doesn't work. I think being a great listener is third. And then I'd say just some sort of, whatever you want to call it. I love the word moxie or drive or you have to have that ability to get you up in the morning and say, man, what I'm doing makes a difference. Especially major gift work. I say this all the time. Seldom is it ever urgent. It's always important. Seldom is a donor raising their hand saying, hey, I need better cultivation. I should have had a better ask. They're not doing that. So what gets you up in the morning to say, man, what I'm doing on this Tuesday morning when nobody's really looking makes a difference. So I think generosity, I'm trying to think of the things I just said, generosity, you know, heart for the passion, if you will, basically your own drive, and just some humility within that are really key qualities.
I love that. All right. I want to shift into, I want to hopefully get a couple of in the field stories from you. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
I'd love for you to share with our listeners what the most impactful donor visit you've ever had. Like, what did that entail?
Man, there's a lot, but one just comes to mind. And so I was working, one of my first clients was a K-12 private school. And, I thought I knew what I was doing, but I wasn't sure. I'm hands-on. They got no development staff. And I'm working with the board, and we're going to do a $6 million land raise. And it was a lot of money at that time for this organization. It was in 2001. So I'd done my best work. We knew we only had a handful of major donors, kind of worked through. But it just, there wasn't any equation that added up to $6 million. I'll put it that way. And so we had a lead donor give $1 million lead gift that I had asked for, and they're super generous. They really understood legacy and the future of even not their kids, but what we were trying to build if we could get this land. We went through due diligence, raised some others, went to the community, but we were still short. Back in those days, we showed videos. I don't know if you remember those, Andrew. Where
we'd do like actual videos, you mean?
So we put together a campaign video, and I went over to their house. I called them, and I said, hey, I'm so excited. I want to show you this. Oh, Brian, it's late. Don't worry about it. I said, no, I want to show it to you. I went over to their house, showed them the video. Both of them started tearing up. And these were very educated, very focused people. They asked me if they could be excused for a minute. And so I'm just thinking, man, what all is happening here? They went into the bedroom. They're people of faith. They came back out and said, look, this is a huge stretch for us, but we're going to close down the campaign and give another $1 million on top of this.
Wow.
And all I was doing was just checking the box of being faithful to say, look, you got us here. I want to be the one that unveils the video to you. Making momentum. This is just a thank you. This is just a stewardship saying, this has been fun to build together, and that moved them so much. And
wow.
I realized then that what we do is important, but man, it's still about the motivation of what, the personal motivation of the cause in these major ministry partners is what the drive. If we can connect that to this vision, people will give beyond what we can ever imagine. And that was just built into me early through that.
That's an awesome story. Thank you for sharing that. I want to take a little bit of a different tack. So I've been talking a lot lately with fundraisers and other consultants about the idea of recovering from failure, right? Because I think there's such a level of fear in so many organizations and in so many fundraisers. And so I try to tell stories as frequently as I can about the, screw ups that I've had personally in the industry. And then I say something like, and I'm still here, right? So can you share with us just like, is there another, maybe a donor story or an internal, working story from your career where you were like, wow, I really messed that up. And I'm not sure if I'm going to have if my chair is going to be here tomorrow, but and what you learn from that process.
Yeah. I think about two things. I think about answering that personally. But then I think about a principle that I like to teach. So I'll just talk about my personal one that comes out. There's been many. But I learned fundraising when I went to Dallas Seminary from somebody that was really, really gifted at just inspiration, being up front. I don't want to say this in a bad way, but he could just wing things very easily without preparation. And
sure.
And I tried to be that because I thought that's what fundraising was. I at that point, I was so... I was so early on that I thought, man, if he's this good, that must be the track. But I knew it wasn't who I was. We talked about earlier, we got to tap into who we are and how we're wired if we're going to really be successful. I can't try to be you at all, right? I got to be me, and then I can learn things from you. So I just had some really honest but challenging feedback when people would tell me, you're not him. And I had two different donors within about 2 weeks said, you're not him. Because I was trying to do things and show up at their office, and it was crushing. And then I just thought, well, where's my place? So it was a learning process. At the end of the day, these actually were people that were actually speaking boldly to me, but actually helping me because I wasn't him and I wasn't going to be successful. Now with fundraisers, the principle is if it's an honest mistake, I think ministry partners and donors can really understand we're going to make mistakes. We make them as consultants, even though you know, you just show up for whatever reason and you're just making a mistake. But I think you got to be authentic into who you are. I think what you can't get back from donors is when trust is so key, right, to relationship, and you're a part of brokering that trust. You know, when I'm with an organization, I'm an extension of that board, that CEO, that program staff. I'm the face. I'm the message translator. I've got to be authentic. And I think when you make mistakes when you're not authentic, that's a course correction. That's a course correction because I don't think you're going to be successful. And I think when you break that trust with donors, it's really hard to earn that back.
Yeah, man.
There's a difference between just natural mistakes, trying to do well, and then trying to be somebody you're not.
Yeah, no, I get that. There's a lot of wisdom in that, man. Thank you. Okay, we've got time for one more question before we've got to part for the day. Think about all those young fundraisers that are entering the industry this year, right? What are the two or three pieces of wisdom you would share with somebody if they were sitting across from you right now, having never sat with a donor before, saying, Brian, what do I need to know? What would you share with them?
Well, first thing that comes out is what's shaped my career. Go find 10 fundraisers or leaders in your own area. You know, ask them for a cup of coffee and invest in them for 45 minutes and ask questions. If you're going to be a great fundraiser, you're going to be a great question asker anyways. People talk about how they struggle with making the ask. I say, look, I could probably help you. There are some techniques there, but learn to be a great ask. It's the ask before the ask that counts. Amen. So I would seek out others and just learn. Ask them some basic questions about who they are, how they're set up, less around technique and more about just what makes the relationship and the role key. I think that's number one. I think too, just, you know, we talked about earlier, what is your own kind of talking point, your own testimony? When I get with somebody, I may not talk a lot, but they want to know that why am I in this? What am I here to do? Why am I a consultant? Well, you know, I can tell people part of kind of like my role calling is to strengthen vision, purpose, and legacy in others through kind of a relational, authentic way. That's what gets me up in the morning. Yeah. So I love adding value to, you know, major gift officers and teams and seeing them thrive. Like that's my energy. So what is that for you? And then there's lots of different trainings. Don't try to be an expert in all things. I think you got to understand what is your role within the organization, especially if you're already hired. Ask your boss, what three things would make the difference in my role this year? You're going to learn other things in this industry, but don't try to be a general, mid, major, foundation. Like, that'll come over time. But what are my three key things that would be successful? And then go get some training and as much as you can learn about those things and just start applying them. That's where I would start to keep it simple. Start to get, and you've seen this before, Andrew, when you start getting these reps, it's like being in the gym. You can go from, man, I could never do this. This is scary. How do you even get started? To the confidence that can grow over just even a year's time to where somebody can be like, man, I'm loving what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that crawl, walk, run strategy.
No, that's awesome. This has been a great conversation, Brian. Thank you for being here. How do people reach you?
Best place is my cell phone, really. 214-763-1555. The reason being is I love conversations. If anything we've talked about you're dealing with as a leader or an MGO, man, I'm a free cup of coffee. Grab 15 minutes, 20. If I can help you, I always work out of a service. Everything we've done client-wise normally comes through relationship. You can find me through Dickerson Baker website and email me there. Those are the best two. I'm not near the social media presence that some of these others. I do have LinkedIn as well, so you can reach me there.
Very cool.
I'll get back to you. I'm proactive on that. Even I love the people we serve. They're the heroes and they're key in what we do. We're the fuel for the ministry or the organization, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we can remind ourselves what we do gives that organization the ability to accomplish more vision, have more impact, and do it more seamlessly. That's worth getting you up in the morning.
Amen to that, man. All right, brother. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks for this time. See ya.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. I have two favors to ask before I let you go. First, if you enjoyed this episode, please rate us and review us on whatever podcast platform you use to listen to this show. It'll help us reach more people with the tips and insights that you find most valuable. My second favor is a little bit of a favor to ask, but also a little bit of a gift to you. I write a daily Substack newsletter called the Leadership Growth Newsletter. It's free to you, and I write it to help people lead more effectively and in both life and at work. I'd love for you to click the link in the show notes and subscribe to that newsletter as well. Until next time, friends, I hope you make it a great day.